The Voice of Venus by Ernest L. Norman. Chapter I. To the planet Venus I bid you welcome for my people and for myself. I am known as an avatar and I would show you some of our ways of life and some of the wonders of the spiritual realms. But first, in order to understand what might better be called a plane, or a dimension, as it is sometimes referred to by the people of the earth, we may liken these things to something similar to a large soap bubble which is being blown by a child with the familiar bubble pipe, and while the bubble is a thing of beauty and glows with iridescent colors, yet if we were to examine it under a powerful magnifying glass we would find it even more wonderful. For here are microscopic particles of water, each one rounded, and each one adheres to its neighbor by the law of adhesive relationship. And so likewise is the great cosmic universe about us and the many suns and planetary systems, each one adhering to the others through the laws of great universal magnetic structures or lines of force, and countless suns make one star cluster, which is known as a galaxy by your astronomers, and each galaxy is but a pinpoint of light in the great celestial universe. Yet there are universes beyond universes, each one occupying a relationship something similar to the tiny water droplet in the soap bubble. And like the soap bubble, which represents an adhesive mass of particles, supported by other adhesive particles called the atmosphere, so likewise are the countless universes which are strung out through what you call space. They are likewise supported and maintain their relationship with what is called the material plane by other supporting structures which can be called, for want of a better name, dimensions. If we look at the beam of a searchlight, we will see that from the point of emergence from the lens as it progresses farther and farther away from its source it loses its brilliance and intensity. So likewise does your mind function. If we visualize the energizing life force, which is the sustaining and motivating factor in all things about you, such sustaining force must be of such frequencies or intensities that are compatible with your perception. For perception is necessary in all stages of soul evolution, and while the many dimensions or planes extend on and on into infinity, to your mind this infinity is somewhat likened to the searchlight beam, and the farther your mind must travel, more correctly, to visualize such infinity. Such dimensions are not compatible with your present status of conception. These factors, as they have been explained, must be borne in mind before it is possible for the Earthman to visualize such phenomena as flying saucers or space travel. Likewise, it is extremely difficult for the Earth scientist to conceive anything which is beyond his own realm or dimension, and with such instrumentation as he has contrived to substantiate his limited perception. It is one of the tasks of each individual, in making his soul evolution, that he must first set about to tear down such preconceived limited concepts. It has been said about many of the numerous scientists, as they call themselves, on the earth plane that they have contrived something of an understanding in their relationships with other dimensions. They have likewise numbered these dimensions, such as the third, fourth, fifth, etc. Such a concept is like the child who picks up a handful of shiny pebbles and thinks that these are the only pebbles in the world. A dimension cannot be numbered, neither can it be called higher or lower than its neighbor, for a dimension is roughly an accumulation or spectrum of vibration which maintains a certain basic harmonic relationship. It is one of the common fallacies of the Earthman to believe that energy is destructive or that it is sinful. He must always remember that all energy has as its emanating force or fountainhead what is sometimes referred to as the Supreme Being in Earth language, and while Earthmen may use or misuse energy in some destructive form, yet it cannot remain destructive, for such is the way of energy from this divine fountainhead. Thus through the evolution of time must it ever be, and through the many lives of each individual, that while the individual is misusing energy destructively, he is unwittingly learning its proper usage. So the end result becomes one in which the supreme wisdom of the fountainhead teaches all mankind, each in his own way, and so therefore can never become destructive. In our own planetary system, the Earth astronomer has found through his telescopes various other heavenly orbs or bodies revolving in fixed orbits around our central Sun. And he has assumed from such external appearance or from studies made by refractory instruments that these planets, as he calls them, can or cannot sustain life as compared to the life about him on his own Earth plane. Such a concept is extremely limited and baseless, and while he calls himself a scientist, he has not reached the point in his mental evolution where he can visualize anything beyond the spectra of his own 100 elements, and thus he has become like the child with the pebbles. Each and every planet in this solar system could quite possibly support life in one of the countless innumerable dimensions which lie outside the realm of perception for the Earthman. It can also be said that while the Earthman sees about him many things which are completely intangible, as far as his own perception is concerned, even though, ironically, he may have created these so-called intangibles. He may think he has the picture of the atom, yet he has never seen one. He may send pictures and sound through the air, and yet he is not quite sure how this is done. Life for the Earth scientist is an almost daily breakdown of many of the time-honored and treasured laws of the past. While this has been going on for thousands of years, so likewise will thousands of years of the future hold breakdowns of many of the ideas and laws which he has set up for himself at this day and time. Through your mediumship, you were given a factual picture of life on the planet Mars, and this planet lies closer to your own spectra than any other of the planets of the solar system. In fact, one of your races of people were migrants from this planet. Let it be said to the astronomers of your Earth that they have not seen all of the planets of your solar system, for there are others which reside in different spectra and therefore cannot be viewed or analyzed by any means known to your Earth people. The planet Venus has always been something of great mystery to the Earth astronomer because it seems to be shielded by what appears to be masses of clouds. This is erroneous. These so-called cloud masses or vapors are actually substances which reside outside of the realm or spectra of the 101 known Earth elements. They are actually, in a sense, condensed masses of waveforms of high-frequency energies which are kept like a protecting envelope around the planet through certain applied laws of frequency relationships. This has been done purposely by the highly developed minds which live on Venus to avoid what would be an obvious state of confusion of the Earth people, inasmuch as if they could see through their telescopes the actual surface of Venus, and its radiant beauty as well as its completely different spectral analysis, it would not yield to any known scientific Earth definition. The materials which compose this planet, while they might appear to be solid if you were standing there, are actually outside the realm of frequency relationships with which the Earth people are familiar in their own spectra. In other words, it is something similar to your equation of water. While water is actually gas, in different temperatures it changes and becomes solid, liquid, or gaseous. So likewise could any of your 101 known elements assume entirely different properties or relationships under different atomic frequencies and yet still remain the same reactive element. Life on the planet Venus is in all phases and all relationships, and does exist in an advanced state of harmonic frequency relationships. If an Earth being was suddenly transported in the flesh to the planet Venus, he might find himself in a similar position to a man floating in midair in a steam room. While the same water vapor frozen on a surface could easily support him, it could not support him as steam or vapor. The Earth scientist has to learn two basic facts about atomic structures. He has partially succeeded in this in molecular relationships, but has not visualized the same principle of conception in the frequency rate of vibration of the so-called atomic structures. Therefore, the man with his Earth body on the planet Venus would more or less find himself in his Earth body and Earth mind in a world which was completely devoid of form and substance. Neither could he see any of that which was about him, and he would quickly perish or separate himself from his Earth body in what is called death, because of his lack of perception. Life on the planet Venus is made possible only to those who have evolved in their spiritual progression to a point where an entirely new and unlimited perception has become a vital and integrated working agent of their life force. Under such conditions, all phenomena, such as is known to Earth people, is a common part of the life of every Venusian. Your own avatar of spiritual science, whom you call Christ, demonstrated a factual working facet of this conception. In other words, the mind of each individual becomes an integrated working part of the great fountainhead, and as such an individual participant can, and does, direct this life-giving, all-energizing, all-constructive, all-intelligent force into everything about him and into everything he does. For example, he does not need to do as the earth man does in making his clothes, gather the wool or the blossom and go through the lengthy manipulative processes to construct these garments. Instead, the Venusian takes this vital constructive energizing force from the fountainhead and so directs it through the science of his own mind that it becomes the shining luminous garments about him. Likewise are his dwellings and all the things about him so constructed. But I see your earth minds are tired, and so I will leave you for the present, but I shall return on the light frequency beam when conditions are proper and necessary. From the people of Venus I bid you Godspeed. Chapter 2. Since speaking to you last time, I may have said some things which may have seemed very strange to you, for, before taking an astral flight to Venus and witnessing a factual portrayal of what is to be seen there, it is necessary to go beyond the commonly accepted standards of Earth life. Even the most learned men on your Earth planet would be less than infants in our world. We do not wish to depreciate or to cause any man to feel a sense of inferiority because he has not progressed in his soul evolution to a point where he could visualize such things as are in this realm and dimension. The thought patterns of mankind on the Earth are such universally used and commonly practiced elemental thought patterns, which have been relived basically throughout the pages of history. The thought patterns of the average Earth person is very simple and elemental. He is taught, and learns from infancy, to compare all the things he sees about him in direct proportion to such outside or external stimulating agents, such as fear, pain, or hate, which induce certain reactive thought patterns within the child's mind. These are further strengthened and solidified with the passing of years, and inasmuch as his fellow man about him is likewise so steeped in these traditional thought patterns, the net result is that he is continually at strife within himself and that he takes recourse to factors of safety by some semblance of unified community or civic government, which in all cases is only the determining factor of safety against other communities or nations. All in all, such a reactionary thought pattern as is practiced, individually and collectively, among communities or nations becomes the agent of outward expression of the individual. The hatreds, fears, insecurities, and other reactionary factors that form this conglomerate and collective mass of negation must, and always does, cause such calamities as wars, plagues, and mass murders. Contrast this reactionary way of life to one which has been described to you from your sister planet Mars, or, in somewhat a similar fashion, to those who evolve unto the planet Venus. While it cannot be said that a child here is born of the womb, but rather is a product of evolution from some spiritual plane of progression, yet the beginning of the life of an individual on the planet Venus can in many respects be likened to the periods of infancy, adolescence, and adulthood. However, here the similarity ceases. Usually such individuals arrive at our way of life with a conscious retained memory factor of all they have been before. There are none of the usually associated periods of loss of memory through some lower phase of reincarnation. So therefore the individual begins his life cycle in something of a state of consciousness which you might call mastership. The child, if he can be called such, is beginning his evolutionary cycle, though life on this planet is not concerned with the factor of self. He has long ago lost his personal sense of ego and its many fearful implications and assumed instead the cloak of statehood, which links him with the great and universal brotherhood, which is not concerned with self, but only with the betterment of the countless billions of his fellow men which have not yet evolved into a state of spiritual maturity. In direct contrast to the limited perspective which the Earthman sees about him, the Venusian has before him the unlimited vistas of an infinite universe. Instead of being bound by fetters which are of steel-like strength and made of the substance of one's own fears and insecurities, he sees before him the limitless heights into which he may travel beyond the ends of time, as you measure it out to yourselves in your earth lives. In our previous discussion, other factors were mentioned, such as the relative values of what you call solid substance or mass and what is called energy. Many years ago, one of the more learned men of your earth attempted to explain the relationship of mass and energy. This man, working in conjunction with a college, attempted also to explain the transmission of energy. While these explanations, being more advanced than any previous explanations, seem to satisfy the need of the present-day generation, and while the earth scientists were advanced by their understanding and usage, yet one important and vital factor was missed. This important factor, which should have been included in these hypotheses, was the element of frequency. Before I progress further, however, I must explain that the word frequency is used only for the want of a better word. In general terminology, as you understand frequency, it is the coming and going, or reoccurrence of successive movements which are related to time and space. A person may come and go into his home, the number of times being the frequency, or your electric house current is moved on the surface of the wire in short bursts or pulsations at the rate of 60 per second. Here again the elements of time and space are involved. In other dimensions, the term frequency would relate only to such movements of force or energy which have a basic fundamental relationship according to the circular path in which they travel. These things may be a little difficult for your earth minds to understand, for many of the associated factors of your earth lives are interwoven with the elements of time and space. In your next step of evolution, it may take many thousands of years to eliminate these elements from your thinking. Reasoning or logic, and the power of mental assimilation, become comparatively easy in your newfound freedom, for with the elimination of time and space you will be able to travel, as it were, mentally into other realms and dimensions, or reoccurrence of successive movements, which are a meaning of frequency that is just beginning to be basically understood by the earth scientist. He has found that with high pulsating currents through certain types of crystals he can regenerate frequencies or vibrations up to a million times per second. It makes little difference that he is still erroneously calling these frequencies sound. For sound in its true sense relates only to the spectra which can be conceived with the human mind. What Earthman has actually begun to find is a whole new world which he may call vibration, but which he will find from time to time will break down many of the strongly conceived so-called physical laws. One of the things the Earthman must find out himself is that there are no laws. A law exists within his mind only as a preconceived principle, and all the written laws in the world are not worth the paper they are written on. Simply because laws, whether civic or spiritual, resolve into the moral character of the individual. Likewise, in approaching the great fountainhead which we will call God, we will find that, contrary to belief, God has no laws. He has placed no restricting fetters upon your growth or your downfall. God in his infinite wisdom knows that what is sometimes called sin, resolves only into preconceived notions of right and wrong, which becomes pertinent vital issues with the spiritual evolution of the individual. But I am digressing. Getting back to the more, shall we say, elemental, dash understanding of what is mass and energy, as I have pointed out, the frequency factor has not yet assumed its true relationship in the earth plane science. Man does use, in many ways, energy. This relates to the transmission of such energy, in its many uses, in the world about him. He has not yet discovered in a true scientific fashion that the relationship of this frequency to atomic structures, as he calls them, is the basic underlying and determining factor in what he calls mass or weight. Your avatar Christ, who was at one time Master of Venus, explained this principle of relationship in a very simple way by walking upon water and by resurrecting himself from a stone tomb. In other words, by simply changing the basic relationship of the atomic structures within his body with the higher dimensions or the source, he became weightless and was able to pass through seemingly solid stone. While in such a condition, of being weightless or without the appearance of solidity, the various atomic structures of his body, which you call elements, were not in the least changed in the relationship to your third dimension, or earth structures as you call them, except in factors of solidity and weight. In other words, they would have still been reactive in the chemical test tube or the spectroscope as such commonly designated elements which are known to compose your bodies. Likewise, all of the 101 odd elements which are known to Earth scientists could be changed in their relationship to the higher dimensions or to the fountainhead, and would likewise become weightless and without solidity, or by the same token be made so infinitely heavy that they would defy all your preconceived ideas of understanding. Some of your Earth astronomers have postulated a reasonable equation in their researches by declaring they have found a star which contains atomic structures so dense that a cubic inch weighs 2,000 tons. May I again remind you that the terms weight, solidity, time, and space are only factors which have been induced in your present-day Earth life understanding. Therefore, a trip to Venus, if it could be assumed, by any Earth person in a physical body in which he walks about the Earth, would find conditions on the planet Venus quite different than he may have anticipated. The astronomer on Earth has succeeded to a certain degree in theorizing that certain chemical elements exist on or in the planet Venus which are similar to those on the Earth, but lo, my friend, he would find to his surprise and chagrin, that these elements are vastly different in his commonly accepted understanding of solidity or weight. An ancient man of more advanced understanding, while sitting in his bath, found that each earth element, such as silver and gold, displaced, when immersed, different quantities of water. He was so elated by this discovery that he ran down the street naked, screaming, "Eureka! I have found it!" Even in your present-day understanding, this so-called law of specific gravity has been displaced by a more accurate system of atomic weights. If the ancient man were living today in your world and time, he would not need to immerse the king's crown in water to find that the king had been defrauded and that it contained silver. I am pointing out this story to you that in the course of history or evolution, man will and does, though sometimes ever so slowly, progress. I could point out many and numerous displacements in physical laws which are related to the evolution of the Earth people. Therefore, in the future it can be justly prophesied that man will reach greater heights in his understanding of all the things about him. He will learn that his mind is bound only by his own preconceived notions. He will find, in breaking these bonds, the untrammeled limitless infinite vistas of God's infinite cosmos. He will also learn to lose the importance of his own selfish ego consciousness, and thus become what he must become, a vital integral participant in a universal brotherhood of man. Chapter 3. Good evening. I am known as Shatok. I will speak for Malvar as he will not be with you this evening. However, we all speak the same language and nothing will be lost. Malvar belongs to the council and is in the upper chamber this evening. In the two previous talks by my worthy brother, he discussed at some length some of the underlying principles in the construction of what is called matter, and while these discussions seemed rather lengthy, it is necessary to prepare you, as otherwise the true meaning of much that will be described to you, or that you may see with your mind's eye, may be lost. In passing in review what has been previously explained, I hope that by now you will have begun to understand just what is meant by the relationship of mass and energy, and that mass and energy are all one and the same. The difference being in the way in which they are perceived, according to such dimensional factors as time and space. In the atom we find energy expressed in the relationship of time and space in such a way that it is seemingly solid or as mass. The lightning which streaks through the sky, or the light from the sun, is somewhat the same energy expressed in a different way, with the factors of time and space. Now that we have begun to understand the natural phenomenon of energy either as a moving dynamic force, or as an apparently solid substance, we must not say that the expression or materialization of mass and energy is confined in what might be called the natural sequence of such manifestations as you are accustomed to in your daily lives. In other words, you will find individually in your soul evolution your own particular cycle whereby you shall be able to use and direct energy from a higher dimensional plane, through the channel of the mind and without the use of the hands. In your earth life existence, ideas are formed usually through the interrelative thought processes. In order to materialize such an idea, it must be worked out with the various materialistic processes which you have evolved in your daily transmission of life. The use of familiar everyday objects about you were all originally such ideas. The watch which you wear on your wrist or the machine you call the automobile are all products of countless ideas and were brought into materialization only through a great deal of work and experimentation. In a more highly evolved state of consciousness, such an idea of materialization would of course seem very crude. Such negative qualities as fear of human error, tolerances, and production failures do not enter in. Such a highly evolved mind conceives, visualizes, and realizes the infinite perfection of universal energy which stems from the fountainhead. Such energy needs only the proper directive channel to individualize its potentialities. You people of the earth have often called this energy God, and as has been explained, as God it is infinite. So he must express, not only infinity, but infinite individualism. It is that infinite wisdom of God which has conceived that by the creation of man he has individualized himself, and that as man exists in the countless planes and dimensions in which God expresses and lives in the infinite, so he also likewise expresses himself in all these realms and dimensions in a finite way. Therefore, my friends, we must not say that I am better than such a man or look down on someone whose skin is of a different color. Likewise must we love everybody. For if we love not them, how can we love our God who has created himself in a finite way in every man? Now that we have discussed our relationship with the infinite Creator, we can begin to visualize that it is indeed a great and sacred thing and one of holy trust when in this stage of evolution we find ourselves an open directive channel for this God force. And yet here again is God expressing infinity. For in all other roles he has assumed the supreme position of the Master Creator. So now he becomes in a finite way subservient through the channel of man's mind. This has been expressed in a lesser degree in the creative ideology of the people of the earth and of similar planes, God there as in all other places still being the prompting uplifting overlord. In assuming the role of mastership, God and his wondrous creative power and wisdom became the complete obedient servant of the individual, for now the individual can direct this creative intelligent energy in such a manner that it will create all of the things that the individual deems necessary for the time and place. The Avatar Christ, in performing his miracles, did just this. The story of the loaves and fishes is one in which the creative life energy of God was so directed that it became loaves and fishes. A closer analysis of this process would reveal that this creative structure was followed by a secondary instantaneous regrouping into molecular structures and thus became fishes and bread. You may ask how it is possible for the mind of an individual to assume mastership over God, as it may at first appear. This is not correct. We must remember that the individual is God only in a finite personalized form, and in expressing individualized personality has assumed a correct and delicately balanced relationship with infinite God. On the planet Venus we all have, who are living here, taken our first step in the relationship of such mastership. It is here in our daily lives that we put into practice this harmonious creative relationship with the fountainhead into all of the acts of our daily lives. Mind is the creative principle, using and directing this God force in the creation of all the essentials of life. As was touched upon previously, your familiar sense of mass or solidity would be valueless here. All atomic structures which compose this planet and all of the things about it do not, shall we say, vibrate in the same plane of relationship from the emanating source of the fountainhead. Therefore, your five physical senses of touch, taste, smell, seeing, and hearing would be quite useless here, as they have been evolved to function in atomic structures and frequencies which were of a lower and different relationship to the fountainhead. However, to us our world is in a general sense quite as solid as yours. Our various functions of sight, sound, hearing, smell and feeling are of course evolved to function in this particular plane or dimension. Here again I must draw a similarity picture. While you say in a spiritual sense God supplies your every need, yet you find it necessary to plant the seed and harvest the crop, or you must mine and smelt metal, or in whatever particular direction you may look, you must engage in work for the necessities of life. In our world God is likewise the fountainhead of all supply. However, we do not find it necessary to earn the daily essentials with the sweat of our brow. In our understanding God has become the supreme energizing force which feeds our bodies, which clothes us, and which in short does everything for us without the expenditure of time and energy, and a great preponderance of machinery. I may point out that in your Bible you will find accounts of certain avatars or holy men who fed themselves directly from the fountainhead and so lived for many days without food or drink passing their lips, nor did they suffer any discomfort in so doing. Tonight we are ringing a great golden bell in the central chapel, so that its vibrations will carry across the distances which separate us in a physical sense from mankind who lives on many planets, and each note of this golden bell carries with it the united and concerted prayer of love and goodwill to man wherever he may be found. On the next occasion my brother Malvar will attend you. Until then I, Shatok, wish upon you all the graces of the Almighty God. Chapter 4. Greetings again, my friends, and all my brothers and sisters on the earth plane. May I say first that I am very happy to be with you again and to thank you for the gracious way in which you received my brother during my enforced absence. I have decided that inasmuch as you have begun to understand that the factors of energy and mass are but relative and that they depend primarily for expression upon the source or fountainhead, and that these equations of energy and mass are but the outward intelligence expressed from the fountainhead, I have been very anxious that you understand this principle thoroughly. And it is partly because of this that I will discuss the topic of today, which, although it does not necessarily pertain to the expression of life on Venus, is pertinent and vital for your understanding and peace of mind in the future generations of mankind upon the Earth plane. Our topic today will deal with spacecraft and the historical background of the Earth with regard to interplanetary travel. When your scientists touched off the first atom bomb, it had an immediate and far-reaching effect into many of the astral worlds and in some of the dimensions which are more closely related to the Earth. About five planets, including Venus, were immediately startled and gravely concerned with what might be the misuse of atomic power. Clarion, another planet, not generally known to the Earth people, was another one so concerned, likewise Mars. Eros also was alerted and was swung into an orbit which would bring it in close conjunction with the Earth. These planets all sent out spacecraft or used other means to explore the Earth to find out all possible ramifications which might be involved in these atomic explosions. The people of the Earth during the following years were tremendously excited by the appearance and strange behavior of these various types of craft. One type in particular, which you call flying saucers, has caused the greatest consternation and conjecture, particularly to the Earth scientist. He is at a loss to explain the sudden appearance and disappearance of these craft. Also, he is flabbergasted with the tremendous speeds which they can attain and which he can only track on his radar screen. He is also bewildered by their appearance of being at a white-hot heat or cooling to a dull cherry red. To interject a little mystery here, let me say there is no heat produced in the use of these craft. But first I must digress to explain to you some of the historical background which is necessary to understand your present situation. About 500,000 years ago, the people of Mars were commuting regularly to the Earth by spacecraft. They had established a colony on the southern edge of what is now called the Gobi Desert at the foothills of the Himalayan mountains. They were, however, set upon from time to time by savage bands of native Earthmen who roamed about the Earth at that time. In the last of these forays, a large group of Martians barely escaped with their lives into the nearby hills, where they remained hidden and lost to their countrymen, who finally abandoned the idea of colonization on the Earth. They were a peace-loving people, and although they had weapons at their disposal that would have annihilated these savage Earthmen, yet they refused to use them. And so the Earth swung in its orbit, unattended for several hundred thousand years until the coming of the Lemurians from the planet Lemuria, which is about 700 light years, figured in our planetary system of light measurement, away from our solar system. You may wonder how these men traversed this vast distance without consuming the best part of their lives. It was through the principle of change of frequency relationship which enabled the spacecraft to travel through inner space at speeds approximately 10 times that of your known speed of light, 186,000 miles per second. Therefore, the distance from Lemuria to our solar system could be traversed in a very small fraction of the time which you might assume would normally be necessary, in other words about 5 or 6 years. During this journey, the ship was flown and controlled by a robot calculator. The 11 who occupied the ship remained in a state of suspended animation, something like a cataleptic hypnotic trance. It was about 160,000 years ago in your Earth time that the great spacecraft crashed on the Gobi Desert, very close to where the Martians formerly lived. Inside were these 11 men on this craft, which had come, as you have been told, from a planet much closer to the central vortex of the material universe in our own solar system. This was the planet Lemuria, about 3 times the size of the Earth and warmed by the rays of a huge brilliant copper-colored sun to which it was fairly close. The people of this planet are, compared to your Earth people, of a very large and tall stature. They are also advanced in their spiritual evolution to a point which is about one halfway between the scientific plane of Mars and the spiritual plane of Venus. We had long been in telepathic communication with these people, and it had been their first attempt with spacecraft at such vast distances which had ended so disastrously on Earth. It had not been their desire to land on Earth but rather on Venus. But they had been deflected from their true course by the strong magnetic field of a huge sun they passed on their journey here. You are all somewhat familiar with the story of Mu or Lemuria on your Earth, and how the science of these 11 masters or supermen was handed down through the ages so that it became a vital science of that civilization you call Atlantia. It was the people of Atlantia who still used spacecraft and were, through the knowledge and use of the principle I have explained to you, able to float silently through the air in weightless craft which they propelled by using force beams or energy beams, using as their source of energy the magnetic fluxes which surround the Earth. Near the close of this civilization, there was a great deal of corruption which began to enter into a heretofore very wonderful way of life, and which was something like the utopia which the philosophers are wont to talk about. It was at this time that an avatar who was living on Venus made a pilgrimage to Atlantia, and there, after proving his mastership by placing the flame of life upon a crystal clear quartz block which he materialized from energy, he ruled for the space of 428 days, during which time he wrote a book about life and placed it beneath the flame. It was his warning when he left that nothing should be taken from or added to this book, or else Atlantia would perish. Your history will tell you the sad tale. Sometime after the disappearance of the Avatar, whom you call Christ, a group of Atlantean men, women, and children wishing to preserve their way of life, escaped in a spacecraft to Mars. It was the descendants of these people who were contacted by your Earthman named Fry asterisk as well as numerous others. Asterisk Daniel W. Fry is the author of The White Sands Incident. I am bringing you this story so that I can show you how these craft or flying saucers work and which will also point out to your Earth scientists the underlying principles which they are now hopelessly trying to duplicate. The trip the Earthman took in this flying saucer was quite real. However, it did not take place in the dimension or realm with which he is familiar. This saucer is guided by the mothership, which is a huge cigar-shaped craft which usually hovers motionless out in space at about 10,000 miles distance from the surface. The craft is pilotless and is flown by a beam of energy which projects like an invisible searchlight from the mothership. This beam is hollow like a tube, in the center of which the saucer always remains. The outer shell of this tube-like beam is a composite form of innumerable wave shapes or intelligences, which have been taken from a source coming from the fountainhead, and through processes which are known to them as well as to ourselves, these energies are so directed that they can change the relationship of the atomic structures which compose the metals of the ship and thus render it weightless, as it does not now, in this condition, reside in the spectra of atomic frequencies which are subject to the gravitational pull of the planet Earth. This gravitational field, by the way, is merely a highly charged field of force which has as its origin a condition caused by friction between the outer shell of the Earth and the inner molten core. Now, as I have told you, contrary to general belief, there is no heat involved in the glowing appearance of a flying saucer. This is caused simply by reflection and refraction, similar to that principle which causes a rainbow. In other words, as the basic frequency relationships of the atoms composing the metals are changed, these atoms will, in assuming their place in molecular structures, reproduce such reflection or refraction from various light sources, such as sunlight, daylight, or moonlight. The sudden stopping and starting these strange craft is now likewise more easily understood. If you have watched the pencil-like beam of a searchlight piercing the sky at night, you will see its extreme tip move at a tremendous rate of speed across the sky, and yet if you are standing by the searchlight, you would see that it moves very slowly and but a few inches at a time. This is exactly how these saucers are operated. They are flown up and down, over and around, and in any direction the operator chooses by simply moving the searchlight beam projector. As I have explained, this beam is a hollow tube of energy, and by the simple law of adhesive energy the saucer could not get out of this beam. Now I see that your bodies are beginning to tire, although I know your minds are eager for more information. On my next visit I will give information which is more pertinent to life on Venus. I have brought you the topic of discussion today for several obvious reasons. Inasmuch as all of the underlying principles, as well as the motivating factors, are all interwoven, they are of concern to all races or groups of people who are in a more advanced state of evolution than the Earth peoples. I might add one thing more before I leave, as I have heard you question the validity of flying saucer contacts or of other such similar appearances of spacecraft to seemingly obscure people. These are primarily somewhat in the nature of testings or psychological experiments, and have been meant in a mild way to shock the Earth people from their ruts of materialistic complacency. You are right about one thing, however. We, or any other advanced race, do not and would not seriously affect your own chosen way of life. It is the infinite wisdom of the God who created you in your finite way that you must find your way back to the fountainhead by developing your own spiritual evolution. And so until such future time I will await your convenience. Brother Malvar. Chapter V. Judging by the thoughts which are received by me from you, you are quite anxious that we shall begin our exploration directly on the planet Venus. This I will be most happy to do, as I believe that by now your minds have been sufficiently freed from the bondage of the limited Earth life concepts around you. I do not wish to be misconstrued in my attitude regarding your Earth planet. It is a wondrously conceived and properly constituted place of life for people in your particular phase of development, and while your history reveals that there have been some good cycles and some not so good, yet with all it can be said that you are admirably situated in a world which was conceived as a battleground and testing place between your emotions and carnal desires and as an actual starting place in your spiritual evolution. Of course I am making an exception of the many great old souls who have reincarnated from time to time into your way of life, and by the substance and strength of their wisdom have acted as a leavening agent which was a vital and necessary factor in maintaining the continuity of life in the lower orders of development in which they were working. Perhaps at some later time I will give you some more pertinent facts which will relate to the future history of your planet, for not only is your past history well known to us here on Venus, but your future has also been written. In going to the planet Venus, I will ask one thing of you, that you must remember that while you may see some things which may in some way remind you of your more familiar planet, yet as I have explained, there is nothing similar or comparable to what you call weight or mass, and while all things on Venus do have weight and solidity, but only to those who have evolved into this plane and are properly constituted so that the elemental substructure of their minds and bodies are in close relationship with the elements around them, which is, of course, exactly the same relationship which your minds and bodies bear toward the elemental structures of the earth plane. The difference being, if you will pardon my being repetitious, in the relationship of that hackneyed word dimension. I do not like this word as it has a confining sound and relates to such limitations as measurements, or is suggestive of limited confined spaces. However, I must speak in your language and in such a way as you will best understand me. Now that we are on common ground, we shall approach the planet Venus and begin what I hope will be a profitable as well as enlightening venture, as has been done many times before. We will use as our vehicle our astral body, and with our mind firmly ensconced within its comforting closeness, we will see what happens. But lo, I have hardly spoken before we are there, at least to our first stopping point, which is somewhat outside the astral shell of the planet, or as your astronomers call a similar one around the Earth, the ionosphere. This astral shell around Venus differs somewhat from that of the Earth planet. However, such differences are not so important as to warrant a further discussion. We will instead merely say that its function is somewhat similar to that of the Earth and that it is a protective shield against some of the dangerous radiations which come from various sources in outer space. Your astronomers, in looking at this planet, see only vague masses of cloud-like substances which seem at all times to be a complete envelope. Actually, no Earthman has seen the surface of the planet through a telescope or with any other device he may use in conjunction with these optical instruments. I would like to point out that there are many Earth people who have visited the planet on astral flights and have returned to Earth with different and varying versions of their experiences. This is very easily explained, as they see everything in direct proportion to their particular stage of spiritual evolution. Many people could take a trip around the Earth, and while they may all see the same sights, no two people can describe these things in the same way, nor do they see them in the same way. This factor is much more manifest in their astral flights to Venus and in seeing what they do, inasmuch as the factors relating to conception are of a much more spiritual nature. Their thought patterns and philosophies in their earth life have preconditioned them so that they mentally select, as it were, such facets of perception as are compatible to these thought patterns. However, I believe that through the channel of your mind, we here on the planet Venus can express and describe to the earth people a somewhat broader and more scientifically factual concept of what we actually have here. There are unfortunately very few clear channels, and even much that has been given has been wasted on the desert sands of the minds of the average Earthman. It was hinted previously regarding the appearance of Venus that as it appeared to be cloaked in cloudy masses, the Earth astronomers naturally drew the conclusion that Venus was a wet or watery place and that any life on this planet would therefore have to be aqueous in nature. This is only partially true. While there are clouds in the atmosphere of Venus, they are not wet, damp, vaporous masses, but the moisture which is needed to support the luxuriant growth of vegetation. I can assure you that the planet is anything but aqueous. In explaining the vaporous cloud mass appearance, let us refer back to our original concept, and that is the relationship of elemental substances. They are due to the difference in relationship of atomic structures which compose the planet's atmosphere and the difference of frequency vibration rates. This of course therefore makes these structures invisible to the Earthman in what he conceives to be around the planet. He has simply jumped to the wrong conclusion that because he may see this envelope as a cloudy mass that he may be able to obtain some refractory analysis. This may lead him further astray in his diagnosis, for he has seen nothing more than that which is contained in our extra heavy thick ionosphere and the very deep atmospheric envelope which, of course, surrounds the entire planet. Venus has no axis inclination as has your Earth, therefore there are no seasonal changes. It is roughly one-third larger than the Earth and is also much closer to the Sun. I will not give you the figures on our Venusian measurements as we have small use for such things, but if you wish to satisfy your curiosity, any of your encyclopedias will give you this information. We here on Venus have an entirely different concept of time and space, and such concepts as are used by the Earth astronomers are somewhat reminiscent of the days when we, as children on a similar planet, played with mud pies. Getting down farther into the atmosphere of our planet, we will begin to see many strange, at least to your eyes, and wonderful sights. The surface of this planet encompasses many and highly diversified geological formations. There are many vast mountain ranges, great lakes, rivers, and oceans. You may think at first that this reminds you of your own planet, yet there are many differences. The air itself does not seem to be as heavy, but it gives you a wonderful feeling of exhilaration. This is due partly to the fact that Venus has a much more highly charged magnetic field. This, in combination with other factors, creates a gas somewhat similar to ozone, which you may remember having smelled after a thunderstorm. There are other differences which relate to weather conditions and the lack of your more familiar seasonal changes, due to the difference in the intensity of the magnetic structure of the atmosphere and the ionosphere. All such weather factors are much less violent than on your Earth. Also, we must remember that all elemental structures surrounding this planet are much closer in their linkage or relationship to the fountainhead, and, shall we say, more intelligent and less obstreperous. There are none of the cold winters or snowy regions on this planet. Neither are there the vast arid desert regions or the steaming hot jungles. All in all, the planet is a much more well-behaved vessel of life, partially, as I have said, because of a more highly evolved structural density, and partially because we here on this planet know how to control weather conditions. The Avatar Christ calmed the raging seas and caused the winds to cease their howling, and then boldly walked upon the face of the now calm water. May I say humbly that we here on Venus also know of these things. Another thing which you will notice is the iridescent glowing beauty. Also, the vegetation itself may display a riotous beauty of color and contrast. The seas and waters have a radiant opalescent beauty, and the very mountains seem to be composed of the essence of mother of pearl. All over, and about and around all of this, there are hanging multitudes of rainbow-hued auras. Dewdrops shoot forth radiant shafts of light which are far more brilliant than any you have ever before witnessed. You may see a countless number of strange and fantastically hued birds and huge butterflies whose wings seem to be encrusted with a million jewels. You may taste the waters of some tumbling stream and find them sweet beyond all previous taste experiences. Or you may come upon one of the many cities which seem to hang half suspended between earth and sky, which may remind you somewhat of the pictures in some childhood fairy book of the fairy castle on top of a high hill. Yes, my friends, Venus is a wonderful, beautiful place, and a rich reward which may be well earned through the many thousands of reincarnations an Earth lives. On my next visit, we will seek out one of these fairy castle-like cities and we shall enter in and meet some of those who have earned and richly deserve this reward, and yet even as it must always be so, our respective planes of life are so widely separated that we must return to our respective positions, but we will meet again soon. Brother Malvar. Chapter 6. Although only a few hours have passed since my last visit, conditions are so propitious that it was deemed advantageous that I again make contact. I hope that you will pardon my intrusion in your daily Earth life routine. So we will resume our little trip where it was left off the previous evening. Now we are again back on the surface of Venus and we find ourselves standing in a beautiful forest glade, and although it is quite familiar to me, I see in your mind that you are almost overwhelmed with the beauty. For the benefit of your Earth brothers, let us sit down upon this grassy bank beside a pool so that I may not only explain more fully these things about you, but that I may also clear up some of the salient points which I see are not quite transparent. As you look about you, you see many tall trees which stretch hundreds of feet into the air, and the overhanging branches seem to reach out and form a canopy which delicately laces the radiant solar energy that comes from the great golden orb which shines above, and while it is the same sun which shines on your Earth, it has here quite a different appearance. Not very small and white and extremely brilliant, but it is large and of a soft golden yellow color which can be easily looked into. As you have been told, the sun is not as commonly supposed, a mass of disintegrating atomic energy which is dissipating itself at white hot heat, but is instead a radiant energy projector which converts energy and reflects its light and other associated energy fluxes into what you term your three-dimensional world. This energy source is of course the fountainhead. Due to the difference in atomic constituents and frequency vibration in the atmosphere and astral shell of Venus, the Sun is therefore able to transmit or reflect a somewhat different frequency spectra upon Venus, lower orders of the more actinic rays being properly filtered out, as these rays are merely byproducts in frequency transmission from the radiant source or Sun. I see that you are looking about you and gazing with wonder and awe at the display of the many strange and different species of plant, bird, and insect life. Over there is an orchid-like plant which thrives on air and that it has a blossom so large you could easily lie down in it. Floating upon the surface of the lake you see another aqueous plant growing before you, exactly similar to the one you call the lotus, which was brought to your Earth by one of your holy men who had made an astral flight to this planet, and had actually lived here at one time. However, it is impossible at this time to describe all of these many and wonderful flowers and trees and the busy insect and bird life which lives and flourishes among them. Let it be said, however, and you'll agree with me on looking about you, that it exceeds beyond the wildest reach of the imagination what an Earthman might be capable of envisioning. Many Earth people have, in moments of psychic transmission or experience, caught a glimpse of this fairyland you see about you, and thought they were in heaven, and while this is partially true in comparison to your Earth planet, yet we here on Venus are still in a comparatively low state of evolution, and we are now able to see that stretching far ahead of us there are various and innumerable realms or planes which far exceed our Venusian planet not only in beauty but in a spiritual way of life in which the people of those places live. As I have told you previously, some of the more spiritually advanced peoples of the Earth have had contacts or flights to Venus, several of whom are living in your day and age. However, they have all returned with different and diverse reports as to what they have seen on this planet. As I have said, this is of course due to the extent of their spiritual perception. You may liken the planet Venus in certain ways to your Earth world. As you know, there are countless expressions and ways of life upon your planet. There are the savages in the jungle, as you call them, and there are the Orientals. And there are numerous separations which you call nations, each maintaining a distinct and separate way of life, which is characterized by differences of clothing, speech, forms of government, and so on. In all your previous accounts of the planet Venus, you may have been given the impression that there was only one race or type of people living here. This is entirely erroneous. There are many kinds of people living on this planet, the difference being, however, in the stage of their spiritual evolution or position in the spectra of frequency vibration into which they have automatically gravitated. It is somewhat like the keys upon the piano are divided into groups and octaves. Your Earthman divides these frequency vibrations into relative planes of consciousness, as physical appurtenances. It is different on Venus, inasmuch as the physical does not exist in your generally conceived idea of material or physical. Therefore, such divisions as planes or strata reside in a spiritual concept. When a discarnate entity evolves through time onto the planet Venus, he usually finds himself in one of the lower states of consciousness. He will therefore through time, as you call time, or cycles, incarnate or evolve to this planet, and if he is advancing properly, he will each time rematerialize into a higher state of consciousness. On your Earth planet, the divisions of life are very strongly marked in the physical or material sense. The black man born and raised in the jungle would not feel at home living among your modern skyscrapers. Therefore, there are mental as well as geographical separations. On Venus, this is somewhat different. We might liken them to the differences or levels in one of your skyscrapers, and while all of the people here remain in harmonious relationship with each other as they are vitally interested in each other's welfare, they of course know as individuals their proper place in the scale of their evolution on this planet. Because you have not yet been completely separated from your physical body and have therefore not advanced in your perceptions, you will have to remain content and satisfied with seeing the dimension or plane upon which I, in my plane and those who are like me, are living. So to avoid confusion, you will not be permitted to see the lower realms of consciousness which exist on this planet. Let it be said, however, that the terminology of lower and higher is used only because your vocabulary is so limited and does not include the proper phraseology which would clarify the meaning. Even the very lowest form of man upon our planet could be considered as similar to an adept, or guru, as you call them on your Earth planet. He has already begun to learn to break away from the more bestial way of life such as is found on the lower Earth planes. You people of the Earth spend all but a very few hours of each day in catering to the needs of your body. You must feed it, sleep it, bathe it, and otherwise pamper it. And yet you must otherwise use it or misuse it in gaining more and more of the things to pamper it with. You have become so steeped in the fears which are induced by pain and insecurities that you have incarcerated numbers of your kind, because they have become so weak in mental and physical ways that they have broken down in your treadmill-like existence, and while so incarcerated they are treated even more like animals, and guards with whips and guns are placed over them and they are chained or beaten, or perhaps shocked into insensibility. Such things are indeed crude and barbaric and do not belong in the consciousness of a man who supports such a system 6 days a week and supposedly worships his God on the seventh. And so to further increase this great travesty against his God, he must arm his children with the destructive weapons of aggression and send them out to kill his neighbor's children. Yes, my friend, even the beasts of the field which you use for food are not so unintelligent. But let us get back to my people. As I have said, we possess no physical bodies in your sense of the physical, neither are we born on this planet, as you would call birth by your standards. When a person from another spiritual plane wishes for reasons of his own evolution to live on this planet, he first seeks out, in a spiritual way, a plane or place in which he feels most harmonious and which will be most conducive to his proper growth. He will then seek out a family and a community and make his presence and his wishes known. They in turn will, through the power of their minds, project energy and build for him a body in which he can enter and thrive upon this planet. This is somewhat like your materialization seance, but in a much more advanced and practical form, inasmuch as the participants themselves, or as you call them, the mediums, actually become the parents of the newborn materialized being. Sometimes, however, the newly entered entity is not accustomed to supporting his body in its new environment, and it must therefore be from time to time refreshed and rebuilt by his parents. Sooner or later, however, the newly born individual grasps the idea by using the radiant energy and through his mind will project it into this body and thus keep it alive and vigorous. On your Earth planet, you must eat foods which are transformed into energy by a reflex digestive system so that your bodies may survive. On Venus, however, there is no eating in your commonly accepted concept. Our digestion is processed through the mind into our bodies and becomes an automatic process, which of course leaves us much more time for the better things of life. Just in case you may think this a bit preposterous, remember that energy is energy in whatever form it may assume. Your Earth scientist has already harnessed the solar energies in countless ways for your comfort and convenience. Even the battery in your automobile has stored energy which was originally sunlight in a bygone age, which came down to you stored up in carboniferous deposits or petroleum, and has been converted back to energy through the process of combustion which turns the generator, thus reactivating the battery. As you can easily see by now, we have engaged in what is quite likely to turn out to be a very detailed and lengthy dissertation upon our planetary way of life, and that it is quite different than your way. You must therefore take it in small doses, if I can so use this term, as I know the limitations of your Earth minds and as I would avoid any confusion. Therefore, let us rest for a while and I will return after a suitable interval. So until then, this is Malvar, can I say, signing off.